Good afternoon. This is Use Your Words, Author Speak at KURU 89.1 FM. And we're really fortunate to have a guest from Albuquerque today, Mark Fleischer. And he has been a journalist a lot of his life and a writer, coming to poetry maybe later in life. But I'm going to let him tell us more about himself. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Elise. Pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the books that you have written. I know that there are now four. And would you tell us a little bit about them?
Well, I seem to write books in even-numbered years, like the San Francisco Giants used to win World Series in even-numbered years. In 2014 was my first book, late in the year. It's called Moments of Time. And then in February of 2016, I collaborated with another poet and good friend, Dante Berry, on a chapbook called Obituaries of the Living. And then later that year, 2016, I think in June, another book came out that was solely mine, and that was called Intersections, Poems from the Crossroads. And I'm about to create another book. Well, I have created it. It's kind of waiting to be proofed and then printed, and it's called Reflections, Soundings from the Deep. The three books, Obituaries was kind of done, do-it-yourself project that Dante and I did, and the other three books published by Mercury HeartLink, Stuart Warren of Silver City, who is very familiar, I'm sure, to your listeners.
Yes, he is. It's great to have him here living in Silver City. So Reflections, Soundings from the Deep. How did this last book come about, and how is it a little different than maybe your last book of poetry?
Yeah, actually, I was not going to do another book. As you know, I mean, you've mm-hmm. published two books, and it's a lot of work, you know?
It is.
And at this point in my life, I really didn't want to do all that work of, you know, editing and rewriting and, you know, everything that goes into it. And I had written a whole bunch of stuff, and it was sitting in the computer. I really didn't have to write a lot of new stuff over the last month, let's say, for this book. It was already done. And it was sitting in the computer, and, you know, the light bulb went off and said, well, what good is it sitting in the computer? You know, literature, whether it's poetry or prose, you know, it's a cliche, but it should be heard and should be read. And sitting in the computer, neither one of those things was going to be accomplished. So, as I say, the light bulb went off, and talked to Stuart. He gave me some interesting ideas, and I decided to go ahead with it. But I wanted to do a little bit different, so I've included some prose, some essays, some serious, some not. And Stuart said, well, why not take some poems, like long ones, and turn them into essays? And I said, okay, why not? He said, you know, all you have to do is, you know, take out this, you know, adjust the spacing and the lines and all that kind of thing. So I did a couple of those, and I liked the way it turned out. And then Stuart said, well, why not some photographs? And I said, yeah, why not? So, as you know, I served a year in Vietnam in the Air Force back in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And so I had some photographs from that time. And then my partner and I, Merle and I, went to Vietnam and Cambodia in November of 2016. Mm-hmm. So there's some pictures present day. And then Stuart said, well, what about, you know, old family pictures? And I said, well, it's kind of tough because my family, for whatever reason, we're not picture takers. But I managed to scrape up a couple of pictures of myself back when I was, I don't know, 7 years old, 8 years old. And so they're in the book as well.
I got to see one of them. Stuart sent it to me. It's a great picture of you. Yeah, you're like eight and you're standing maybe in Washington, D.C. There's eight big columns behind you.
Yeah, it was Washington because I had an aunt and uncle in Baltimore, and I would visit them from time to time, and they would, you know, take me to Washington to see the sites. Actually, I think the reason we went was back in that day, Washington did not have a tax on liquor, and my uncle would stock up
I see.
In Washington and then drive back to Baltimore.
I see. But you look kind of like the beginning of a journalist there with your coat, a little belted coat, and you're looking out into the world.
I guess you could have that interpretation.
It looked like that to me. It's a great picture.
Probably at the time I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, but
right.
rather than a journalist. But
When did you think about being a journalist? How did that come about?
Probably in high school.
Hmm.
I was on the student paper. I wrote sports and went to Ohio University and majored in journalism. And then I went in the Air Force and was one of those people who actually got a job in the Air Force that you were trained for. Mm. And I was they called it information specialist. And when I went to Vietnam, I was a combat news reporter. And then when I got out of the Air Force, I went to work in a newspaper in upstate New York, and then another newspaper, and eventually kind of got burned out.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to work for our county government in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still writing because the first position I held was sort of the spokesman for our county executive. So I was writing speeches and press releases. And then I transferred over to the county veterans office. And I thought, well, that's the end of my writing career. But it wasn't, because I found myself writing different stuff. Like if a veteran came in and put a claim in mm-hmm. for a disability, I would have to write it up and sometimes write appeals and things like that. So I was still writing, but just in a different vein.
That's interesting. Just like your destiny kind of shaped in a certain way. And
mm-hmm.
no matter what you did, it still included the writing.
Yeah. And yeah. then when I retired from the county, I was freelance writing for a while and then mm-hmm. eventually got into poetry.
Cool. That's so cool that you came to it later, you know. It all works the way it should. And I know
yeah.
that there is something special about the cover of this new book. How did...
Yeah. I had settled on the title, the main title, Reflections. But let me just backtrack for a second.
Sure.
And then Stuart said, well, you know, come up with a subtitle. And I knew I had to do that because when I did the book Intersections, Stuart said the same thing. You know, you need a subtitle. And I, you know, being kind of new to publishing, I said to myself, why? And then I found out because there was, you know, 127 books on the Internet called Intersections.
Right.
And with this book, Reflections, it was basically the same thing. There's a whole bunch of books available,
mm-hmm.
or not necessarily books, but publications called Reflections. And I said, yes, I better have a subtitle. So anyway, Merle and I had bought, around Christmas time, we had bought a painting from a very good friend of ours named Lindsay Locke in Albuquerque. She's an artist. And we bought this painting and put it up on the wall. And I'm sitting here on the couch with my back to the painting thinking, Reflections. Okay, now I need to come up with an idea for the cover or let Stuart do it. And I thought, well, you know, I'd rather do it. And I turned around and looked at the painting and said, and again, another light bulb went off. And I said, that is the cover. And it's a landscape, and it's entitled Ponds of the Santa Fe Wetlands, and it's a pond with reflections in the water of the trees in the sky. And I said, bingo, that's it.
Great. Oh, that's so great. Yeah. It's perfect. So I know that you pretty much grew up in Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
No, I grew up in New York.
Oh, look at that. I like it when I'm wrong. I'm getting better about liking it when I'm wrong. Okay. You know, those writers, they make it up when they don't really know. And then you came across to more of the Midwest eventually, right?
I went to college in Ohio, yeah.
Right. And then eventually...
Then went back to New York eventually.
Okay. And then eventually came to the Southwest. So
right.
you really have a kind of a diagonal trail.
Yeah. And, you know, you had an interview with Stuart.
Right.
recently, and he talked about characteristics of, you know, writers in the Southwest or the West in general, the East. And I emailed him and I said, okay, I'm now in the West. I used to be in the East. I went to college in the Midwest. What does that make me? And he said, I don't know, but if you find out, let me know.
That's great. Well, I would think it would widen your perspective because you've lived in so many different places. And plus, you know,
yeah,
being in Vietnam.
And of course, as I say in the book and in the previous books, being in Vietnam for a year, that you know, influenced some of my work.
Of course, probably for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, without a question. As I've said to Merle, my partner, I wish I didn't write stuff about Vietnam, but she said, how could you not? And I guess that's the best answer.
Right. And for those of us who weren't there, I'm glad that you do. I'm glad that you do. Do you want to read us a poem?
Yeah. You know, talking about Vietnam a little, with me, and I'm sure any war, not necessarily Vietnam, but the sounds stay with you, and the sights and the smells. And this is a short poem that I wrote based on the sounds, and it's called Disruption. Eyes closed, a chattering machine gun, M16 on full automatic, heart beating faster, pulse more rapid, thump of a mortar, thud of an artillery shell. No short rounds, please. Temperature rising, intermittent icy chill. No, 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 no. Eyes open. Only shoes. Only flamenco. We were sitting at a flamenco performance, and for whatever reason, I closed my eyes, and the sound of the flamenco shoes on the floor just reminded me of all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. Huh. That's a great poem. I love the shortness of it and tautness of it. It really works.
Yeah, I tend to write short poems. Some of them are fairly long in this book, especially the ones that I kind of converted to essays. But most of my poems are, you know, short or medium length.
What do you think sparked your entrance into the world of poetry, Mark?
Good question. Well, I reconnected with Merle 7.5 years ago. We had known each other years and years and years back. So that was kind of an inspiration. And I just meeting a few poets out here, and I just sat down one day and started writing poetry. And I look back on it now, and some of it is, you know, really, really, really bad. But it's funny because I never liked poetry in school or anything and never really got into it. And I was always, you know, newspaper writer, mm-hmm. basically.
The facts.
And I don't know, I just got into it. And once I started, I couldn't stop. And I never thought I would have a book. And a couple of people said, well, you ought to have a book. And basically my reaction was, who, me? Mm-hmm. And then I got together with Stuart. And then I thought, okay, I've got a book. That's it.
That's
and
so
I think books are like tattoos. You know, you can't stop at one.
I also have
a couple of tattoos. You know?
I see. Well, we're gonna stop for just a brief minute for an announcement, and then we'll be right back with Mark Fleischer. Please hang on for just a minute and stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Use Your Words, Author Speak, and we are interviewing Mark Fleischer. I should say I am alone. So we were talking, Mark, let's see, how did we end? We ended talking about tattoos. You can't just have one. Books, you can't just have one. So we have
right.
to move along from there, yes. I was thinking, too, about how you have been a journalist for so many years and your background and how really that part of being a journalist is observing, recording, and that's not that different from what a poet is, except there's that little thing about interpreting that makes it all very different in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is similar, you know, being that detached observer that watches things, is always watching to see what's going on. And then,
yeah, that's very true. You know, observing what's going on around you, and also maybe, you know, taking note of your own experiences. And it's true in the sense, you know, I'll see something out on the in the city, on the street, in a supermarket or whatever, and you know, and say, that's kind of interesting. And this is sort of a, this is also a Vietnam poem.
Okay.
And it got its genesis from seeing an elderly gentleman with a Vietnam vet cap on. And I have a thing where if I see somebody with a cap on, I will go up and extend my hand and say, "Welcome home, buddy." And I did this with this gentleman, and then I went back, and it was actually happened in Whole Foods one day, and I wrote the poem, and I called it Never Too Late. So it's a short poem, so I'll read it.
Thank you.
I spotted the elderly fellow with his black cane propped against a grocery cart, fringes of white wispy hair peeking from his Vietnam vet cap. I waited while he spooned rich, thick seafood gumbo into a cardboard container, soon secured with an appropriate-sized top. He looked about 80 years old, thin, gaunt, with a bent back. "Welcome home," I said, to his obvious surprise. "Thank you," he replied, at the same time shaking my hand with a firm grip. No need to say more. No need to ask what branch of service. No need to ask when were you there. No need to ask where were you stationed. One Vietnam vet to another. We said it all.
Oh, that's great. It's great. I love the picture. I was there right from the get-go. Yeah.
So I don't want to, you know, give the idea that I write just Vietnam poems. I don't.
Okay. Right, but they are part of this book. Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what other kind of poetry is in this book? We don't.
Well, I write what I think are romantic poems.
Great.
I had this was I think the first book. I had gone back east, and I wound up doing a reading at a bookstore in Ithaca, New York. In the Finger Lakes area, not too far from where I lived before I came to New Mexico. And the owner of the bookstore suggested I send a copy to the editor of a local weekly paper, kind of an alternative paper. So I did, and he wrote this review of the book, which was pretty flattering, which I was happy with, but he described my love poems as the product of a 19th century romanticist. And, you know, I said, "I plead guilty."
I see.
I am, among other things, as I say in the preface to the book, I'm a cynic, but I'm also a rank sentimentalist, like the Humphrey Bogart character, Rick Blaine in Casablanca, you know, who's my movie hero, you might say.
Uh-huh. That's great. That's a good combination. Well, read us one of those poems. That would be exciting to hear.
Yeah, this is a real short one, just six lines, and it's called Easy Sunday. Sitting on the bed's edge, second cup of Sunday coffee in hand, feeling the slow, lyrical journey of a feathery touch across shoulders and back, luxuriating in the goosebumps.
Awesome. That's great. Great. All the senses. Wonderful. Tell us how this book, it seems to me, just from the little that I've heard, because the books are just almost out, so Mark is reading today from a proof, and I'm here with my little yellow notebook. Tell me how it's different for you in writing this book than it was in writing your last book. The different kind of feelings, or what makes it different?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, as you can tell by the title, reflections, thinking mm-hmm. back on things. Mm-hmm. And there's also, you know, as I say, I'm primarily, and my newspaper background makes it so, I'm primarily a narrative poet, trying to tell a story.
Right.
But as I say, I kind of, at times, come up with what I call a stream of consciousness curveball. And sometimes it's like, where did that come from? I have no clue. And as I also said in the preface of the book, that a writer, another writer whose name I cannot remember, said that he believed that poems come to us from some place we cannot understand, and we are the conduit for getting them out to the public, so to speak.
Right.
They're somebody else's creation that come through us. And, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but there are times when I write stuff and I go, okay, I have no idea where that came from.
Right. The surprise things, yes.
But there it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think when we connect in a certain way and we're just open, then poems like that can come in, or songs like that can come in. There's a lot of songwriters, too, that say, I have no idea how that happened, you know.
As opposed to a narrative poem, I think these, kind of, as I say, what I call the stream of consciousness curveballs, are open to any and all interpretations. Well, the narrative poem, you know, it tells a story,
right,
and it may evoke feelings and emotions, but the story is pretty straightforward.
Right. Yeah. There's a little bit of difference there. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. That's a good definition of those things. I was wondering if you have an essay that is short that you might read to us.
I'm sorry?
An essay that is in your new book, because they're kind of different.
Are they all pretty long?
All right, then.
Probably the shortest one. It was actually a true experience.
Oh, great.
At Midway Airport in Chicago some time back, and waiting for a plane and observing two people there. I guess I can read it.
Okay.
It's called Renee and Steve. Renee and Steve sit across from me near gate A17 at Chicago's Midway Airport. I don't know their actual names, but they look like a Renee and Steve. They're about 25, young professionals, or perhaps graduate students in Rochester, our mutual destination this night. She is fair-skinned with shoulder-length blonde hair. Although her heritage may be Scandinavian, Renee has that peaches-and-cream complexion associated with British women. Steve seems the strong, silent type, his dark stubble of a few days projecting a sense of ruggedness. Renee and Steve are deep in conversation. She gestures with her hands as she speaks. He seems impassive, looking at a knapsack on the carpet between his feet. Steve turns, puts his arms around Renee, and draws her close. Tears well up in her eyes and run down her face. What, I wonder, did he say to cause her to grab her purse, bolt from her chair, and run from him? He is stunned for a few moments, then appears to text someone on his cell phone. Renee? Steve's face shows not a bit of emotion. Strapping the knapsack to his back, Steve strides to the ubiquitous Hudson News and buys a can of soda. He walks a few feet to the front of an adjacent snack bar, takes a few sips from the can when Renee appears. They talk quietly. Renee gestures again. A minute slips by. Steve strokes Renee's hair and envelops her in his arms. I want to approach them singing Hello, Young Lovers from The King and I. The airport is crowded this Sunday night in late May. Steve and Renee are oblivious to other travelers, except me. He continues stroking her hair and speaks softly to her before they kiss, go inside the snack bar, glance at a menu, order food. Not exactly a makeup dinner, but I think it will do. Our flight is delayed 30 minutes. When I finally board, I find a seat in the front row on the left side of the airplane. Minutes later, Renee and Steve walk past me as they enter the cabin. His eyes find two adjoining seats a few rows behind me. Renee turns toward me and smiles. For a moment, I think she is aware of my eavesdropping on their drama. No, her smile is for the love she and Steve share, a love cemented by a few troublesome minutes. Be brave, young lovers, whoever you are.
That's great.
And, you know, I mean, airports are great places for people watching. So, you know, I mean, once in a while something strikes you. And that was an essay right from the start. It was not a poem that I transformed into an essay.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, really a sketch. It was kind of a prose poem in a way, though. It's great. Ah, thank you. And that gives us a flavor of what to expect in this new book. So this new book by Mark Fleischer is called Reflections, Soundings from the Deep, and it's going to be available on Amazon in like just a few days, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Just coming out this minute.
From Amazon and directly from me.
Right. And yes, and from the source if you live in Albuquerque. But it's great to know that, you know, we keep changing and growing and like you say, bringing everything that you've worked for out into the light of day for other people to read and look at and learn from. So I want to thank you for, you know, having the courage to do that. And I certainly thank you for being on the show today. It's just always great to talk to you. And I wish you and Merle such a good rest of the day. And
thank you, Grace.
Yeah, well, I'll talk to you soon. And I'd like to thank our listeners, too, for tuning in to Use Your Words, Authors Speak. And we'll rerun this next week. And then in 2 weeks, we'll have a new show for you. Thank you.